Hey Osiris listeners, we want to tell you about our friends at Sunset Lake CBD who support this show. Sunset Lake CBD is a Vermont hemp farm crafting affordable CBD products designed to help with sleep and stress without breaking the bank. If you haven't tried CBD before, take it from me, it's a game changer. I use Sunset Lake's tincture every night before I go to bed, helping me get solid, restful sleep. And their gummies are great for daytime. Check out their new Good Vibes gummies, which have just a bit of hemp-derived THC to help you relax and unwind. Sunset Lake CBD crafts products with hemp grown on their family farm and ships them directly to customers. They have tinctures, salves, edibles, coffee, smokables, and even pet products. By the way, their CBD chocolate fudge is awesome. Check them out today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use coupon code TIME for 20% off all products. Sunset Lake CBD, farmer-owned, Vermont-grown.
Osiris.
Loyalty, described as, do you care? And I care, and that's why I'm on this show. Comes a time, here we go.
I'm a sucker for O'Teal, man. I saw that same feeling that I have, that what he filled a void that I didn't even know existed.
It feels so good to, as Ben said, to try to do something about an issue as opposed to complaining.
If you can't help, don't hurt.
If we could just all get out there and throw cream puffs at each other, maybe things would, instead of bullets and angry words, it would be better.
When you stop laughing, you stop living.
There's a worldwide surge in interest in mushrooms.
It was deep, man.
It's not that TM makes your mind quiet down there. It already is. We're just stuck up here. We've lost access.
I'm Jumpin' Jack Flash came out by the Stones. So I thought, all right, perfect, man. I'm gonna drive, and I started driving through the neighborhood, and I got a text from Mick Jagger.
People saying that, you know, what we do is non-essential. Well, playing those few gigs that you saw me at felt pretty essential to me.
It wasn't like they were clapping from here. Is they were clapping from here.
My view of things is that death is the last and best reward for a life well lived.
Like, you gotta, it's the strangest of places if you look at it right, you know?
If you're liking what you're hearing, head on over to patreon.com/comesatimepod and get your bus pass for an extra episode every week.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Comes a Time. That's O'Teal.
And that's Mike. And we have my good friend, Lil John Roberts, drummer extraordinaire. I met him. He was close to a teenager. I think he might have been 20, 21. But, I mean, he's a really special human, first of all, which you will see on the podcast. But just to give you a short list for those of you that might not know, let's just say Stevie Wonder, Janet Jackson, Michael Jackson, Prince, George Benson, like George Duke, we could just go on and on and on. Like, it just goes on and on, the number of people that he's worked with. Yeah. And they love him for a good reason, every last one of them. That was a good one.
Yeah, it totally was. And that was he's another guy that, like, man, I'm so stoked that I get to do this with you, because I get to, like, meet the person behind the music and the person behind the kit, or behind the, you know, the performance. And it's just so nice to see how loving and down to earth and, like, peaceful and centered and all these people are that we get to chat with, comics and musicians alike. And he just is like, that's a guy I want to hang with. That's a dude I want to like sit down and bullshit with. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I came out of this feeling. And that's a good feeling when you have that in a Zoom conversation over a computer, two dimensional. When you get to meet that person, it's like, oh man, like, I could feel you, you know, like, that's a great feeling.
Good stuff. That's
you know what I mean by that?
About. Like, the magic and the spiritual part, like, how is he after all this stuff? You know, he's playing with Wynton Marsalis as a teenager. Right.
Yeah.
As a teenager and going through, but he's still a really nice person. He's still alive for you.
Yeah.
His journey didn't kill him. He's in great physical shape, but he's in great spiritual shape. Like, he's mentoring other people. He's teaching at Berkeley now.
Yeah.
In Boston. And just, man, what a great cat to.
Hey, those are lucky students, man. I think one of my.
Super.
one of my favorite parts of this is, and I don't want to, you know, no teaser, no, you know,
spoilers.
When he talks about how he teaches and how he approaches the students and stuff, that's big. That's huge, because I'll tell you, a teacher can really ruin, like a religion can ruin your thoughts on God. A teacher can ruin your thoughts on learning. And, I don't think he's doing that. I think he's doing the right thing. So this was great. And apparently we're all going to, you know, we're, you, me, him, Chappelle, we're all going to hang. And it's just great. The convergence of, man, I'll tell you, I learned a ton about music from Dave Chappelle. I really, really did.
Yeah, like, interesting. Cool.
Like from his show, like he would have all these great musicians and artists on. And I learned a lot from him. So it's so neat when that, you know, that world, that bubble just keeps growing, you know, like
Little John's so lucky he gets to be the house band for all that.
Yeah.
It's like, you bastard. I love it. couldn't happen to a better guy.
No, he's awesome. And you guys are going to love him. And thank you so much for spending time with us on the podcast, Little John. And folks, listen, head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the Comes a Time podcast channel. Head over right now. Click on YouTube, subscribe. We're going to be doing a lot of like live drops from over there. We're going to be doing some pod, like some just us hanging, and you can join in and you could be a part of the hang and go over there and just sign up for alerts. Cause we'll be alerting you soon. So, and head on over to Oteil's YouTube page, my YouTube page. I'm dropping stand up. Oteil's dropping the ozone, patreon.com/comesatimepod. You know, at our socials and all of that, like just come find us. We got a lot of great plans for you guys, and just be ready. So thank you. And we will catch you guys on the flip. Be safe. What was on your shirt, Oteil?
Bambi.
Peace.
Eric says we're good. All right. And we do intros later. So we just hop into it. And dude, honestly, I'll just tell you, like, we don't really talk about music that much. Even when we have musicians on, we end up talking about life and spirituality, mental health. So, you know, I'm not going to be pounding you like, so what's Stevie like? So what's Janet Jackson like? So what's George Benson like? So what's George Duke like? You know, so much as I would like to do that, just like you and me.
Now, but I can't promise that I'm not going to do that. I
might. Hey, I'm open for whatever, man.
Well, I think Lil Jon played with some of your rap heroes, Mike.
Yeah.
I think. Don't you know the De La guys? You know everybody, John. I don't know the rap and hip hop thing as well as Mike does.
Yeah.
I know Lil Jon. You know everybody.
Yeah, well, surprisingly, I did play once with De La Soul, but it was with Dave Chappelle. Like he brings all these people to his barn. He turned a barn into a club in Ohio. It's crazy. Yeah. So D Nice is the DJ, or DJ Trauma. You know, the way that it's set up, it holds like maybe up to maybe 300 people in the barn, right? So one side of the barn is the DJs on the one side of the stage. The other side of the stage is where the band is set up. And Dave invites all of his friends just come there and perform whatever songs they want to perform. And the band, we pretty much, you know, we know ahead of time, sort of, who might show up. So we might rehearse some of their songs and then be ready for them to show up. So De La was one of them that came and performed before the pandemic.
Oh, man. And you know what today is? Do you know what today is? Today's the
De La Day.
De La Day. We're recording this on De La Day. It's the first day that their music is being streamed on all platforms. And how unbelievably sad that Dave died a couple weeks before that happened. Ooh, one of the founding members. Shout out to De La and True Goy. Man, I love them so much. And I played it all morning. I took a couple walks with my dog. Yeah. And I love De La, and it's so sad the way that happened. I mean, they waited so long for their music to be released, to be streamed, and he died a couple weeks before it happened.
Yeah, God. They had an amazing show last night. I was watching it on somebody's live. And,
at Webster Hall, yeah.
Oh, man. Everybody showed up. It was so much love on the stage and some of the most iconic hip-hop artists performing, you know, together. It was awesome.
Do you feel that there are just certain artists that can obviously transcend genre, but transcend even music as far as like what they, like De La Soul in a world of hip-hop in that era that they came out were so unique. They were called hippies, but they were known to beef if they had to, but they now look where we are, how many years later, and the whole, it's today's like, I feel more excited about this than Easter or whatever, you know, like everyone's getting behind De La, like they meant so much to everybody. When you play with certain folks, you could just tell that they got that, both of you, like they're just on another plane. Like,
oh yeah. And I mean, and we were talking earlier before we started this, spiritually and everything, just on another level. You could tell just hanging out with them and even their music, what it represents. You know, these cats, they're not playing around. Like they really live what they're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. As you have, man. You're such a dude. Where do we start with you, man? Jeez.
How about we start with the first time I heard you play?
Okay, when was that?
I don't remember.
I remember the first time I heard you because my ex-wife, I was looking for another drummer for my solo band.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to use like Jimmy and Sype and then do my solo material. You know, we had ARU and I wanted to do something kind of complimentary to that. I remember my ex-wife going, she had seen you somewhere, I think at Ona's, maybe in Birmingham, Alabama. Or okay. For fans don't know, I lived there for 18 years. And I got home from the road with AR and she goes, I think I found your drummer. And I was like, all right, what's his name? She goes, his name is Lil John. He's really young. She's like, dude. And when people have that look where just the talking stops, that's when I'm like, all right. And then I went to see you, I think at Ona's.
Wow.
In Birmingham. And I was like, you were right. <That's>,
you <know. laughs> I don't remember where I saw you at first, but I just know that when I heard you play, I was like, all right, this guy. And I know a lot of bass players. I play with most of them. And even growing up, my uncle played bass. My dad is an ex-bass player as well. He didn't play like you guys, but you know, he played in gospel choir. He played in the church and everything. But man, I mean, hearing the way that you play bass, I was like, how is that possible? He's playing chords on the bass. Like, we don't even need a keyboard player. Like, what the hell? And he's singing the chords too. This guy's crazy. Man, I don't remember where I saw you play first.
And then
I know it was with ARU somewhere, but I don't know how that happened, because you know the Birmingham connection, like you said, where your lady came and saw me play at the time. You know, I was with Eric Essex, so that connection with Eric and Sean Michael Ray and those guys, something happened where I got a chance to see you play with, I guess it was ARU. I don't think it was by yourself. And then Atlanta. Then when we were in Atlanta, like you had the band with what was it, Eric Vaughn or Kina Boto or somebody like that, and you and Kofi, and Boto. I think maybe Kebby was playing a little bit too. Yep. I can't remember, but Catfish Station. You guys were playing at this place called Catfish Station in Atlanta. I sat in with you guys that day too, because I remember this tape.
Oh, I remember.
I had the tape of Subterranean. That's one of the name songs.
Subterranean.
I had a demo tape of y'all playing. And I'm like, that's right. I think you gave that to me to learn the songs. Like, it's all coming back to me. You know, it's in, it's in like jumbled pieces of how all of this happened.
It's way back there, man. It's way on back there. Because you came on board. I think Sype broke his foot or something.
Something happened. I think maybe his dad might have gotten sick too, or something happened with his dad. Maybe,
something happened where you had to sub for Sype, and he came out with the ARU. This is way back, like early '90s.
No rehearsal.
So our rehearsal was this. This was so cool. We were in the van, and I think I had sent you the stuff, but we weren't going to get a chance. So I knew Lil Jon was going to do his homework, but on the way up, we did the kind of our version of the way bluegrass rehearsals are, except they could just pull their instruments out in the van and have blistering sessions on the way to the gig, right? But we're just singing
picture.
It.
There's a picture of us on the bus. I have a picture of us.
You know, so I'm singing the bass part, and he's like mouthing the drums and playing air drums, and Jimmy's doing it, and we're doing it all with our mouths. And Bruce is up, you recall the day when everybody stopped to see, just sitting in there with his leg shaking like this. And man, we got to the gig, and that turned out to be a flawless rehearsal. Because this dude right here slaughtered that all the hits, you know, all the stuff that had arranged itself become elaborate arrangements over years. He tagged every last one of them, man. And we were even doing it a little bit in the dressing room after we ate, just to like show up on a couple of things. And
I don't know how I did that. First of all, shouts out to Jeff Sipe. Like Jeff Sipe is an amazing drummer. Like when I heard the tape of them playing, I was like, you want me to play this shit tonight? Play like this tonight? Like I haven't even sat down at the drums or nothing. You just want me to sit down and play like Jeff Sipe. Okay,
wow,
yeah.
That's
all right.
Amazing.
All right, cool.
How old were you at that point?
I was like 24 or 5 or something. Yeah, like
early
20s. Really young. This was before Janet. This was before I went on tour with Janet, right? Like,
jeez.
Oh, that's right. That's before Janet, isn't it?
So that was about 94.
But you had already played with so many people at that point, right? You had already played with George at that point. And
No, that came
after. No Benson, no George Duke yet?
All of that came after you guys.
See, I feel like you played with so many cats because, you know, we just had Christian McBride on not long ago. And so all the guys from Philly, I just tell people, like, I don't know what's going on in Philly. But it's still going on. So jeez. I always think like you played with everybody because when you were a teenager, you were already playing with Joey DeFrancesco, Christian, like Stevie Wonder hadn't happened at that point either.
Oh no. That was way later. Yeah. I toured with Stevie in 2014 or 15.
Oh, that's right. Cause I remember we were talking when you were about to get that. That's right. Mm-hmm. I just get confused because you play with George Benson, you play with George Duke, you play with
everybody. I think a lot of it came from playing in church and having to learn songs at the last minute. I think that helped a lot, you know. And then I was always trying to play fusion and stuff too outside of gospel music. Yeah. And I was with Wynton Marsalis, all of us, you know, at an early age of teenagers. Was already exposed to playing, you know, fusion kind of straight ahead stuff. So you know, I could say my chops were kind of ready to be able to take that on, you know, not just be a gospel drummer trying to play jazz, you know. And I've always been put in these positions like that. Snarky Puppy, they called me one night. I was going down to see them play and I was going to see the gig. I was going to hang out with them, Sput and everybody. And they're like, yo, Sput missed his flight. He's going to miss the show. Can you do the gig? I was like, what? Ground Up had just came out. One of their, you know, first like monumental records that just came out. And so, luckily I had listened to some of the records. So I was like, okay, I kind of know some of these songs, but not really. Kind of know. Like it's like Odd Meters and shit everywhere. So Mike's like, man, we need your help, man. We don't have a drummer tonight. And it's a packed house. Everybody in Atlanta's there. I'm like, hell no. What the fuck?
Dude, it's like a minefield. Those gigs are like a minefield.
So when you have to sit in quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So same thing with Oteil that I had to go through. We got in my car outside of the venue. Mike is playing the songs for me. He's counting out the rhythms. This is how this goes right here. This is how this figure goes. I'm like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. I'm like, oh my God, man. How am I going to do this? Like,
wow. Oh my God.
Sold out show. I mean, everybody's there to see Sput play, like myself.
Yeah, thanks. Sput's my boy, me. Exactly. You know, just like the rest of us.
Me and Sput have been friends since we were young teenagers. I met him when he was young in Philly.
Really?
Yeah, church. Really? All the gospel conventions and stuff.
I thought he was in Dallas, but the church is
Yeah, we met at a convention in Philadelphia, and all the Dallas cats came down, and all the Philly guys. We all played together like in this big concert. So that's how we first met. We have been friends since then. And I've always been a fan of his playing. Like later on, I'm like, yeah. Tone and God's Property, all the stuff that he's done, the gospel stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to hang and see Sput play. This is going to be a treat seeing him with Snarky Puppy for the first time, you know, and I got to do the gig. I'm like, what?
Yeah. And the thing is that the harsh, cold truth is the reason they ask is they know you could do it, even though there's a gun up your butt, you know, loaded with the trigger, hair trigger, you know, it's like, it is what I get people. Fortunately, I can't read music anymore. So that gets me off the hook. I'm like, hey, man, you got to go out. Call one of them guys that can sight read this, bro. I'm out.
Man.
Holy
cow, I mean, man. I honestly have to say it's God, man, because it's not me at all. Because I could not pull that off without some higher power.
What's mystical?
You know, helping me do this, man. Like in my mind, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to do this. I have to do this. Like I can't.
Yes, we're doing lose. It.
Yeah, we're doing it. It's going to happen.
Well, I want to talk about that because, you know, you're teaching at Berkeley. Is that where you are right now at Berkeley in Boston?
I'm home right now. But yeah, I'm at Berkeley Monday through Wednesday every week.
So I know you're not up there teaching on math. I've been saying it a lot in a lot of interviews. I'm like, look, man, I'm doing magic because I'm not up here doing math. So it makes me, you know, if it was just numbers, it wouldn't have this emotional effect on people. So I know you're teaching people. What's the magic part you're teaching, the spiritual part, the part that can't be written down or even mimicked?
Right. Well, I don't know if you follow my Instagram and stuff. I'm always posting stuff about, especially some of the drummers and even some of my ensembles, which I really love doing at Berkeley. I don't just teach drummers. That would blow me if I had to just, you know, teach drummers all day. I cannot do that. Like, I love drummers, but not that much. I love bands. I love the singers. I love, you know, help all the, you know, make them sound like a band or whatever. Horns and the whole nine. So, I document some of my journey with some of these drummers. Like the other day I had a drummer playing like this house song that everybody's familiar with. And he's never heard this song before. And he was like, what is this? This is amazing. And I said, all right, let's break it down. I'm going to show you how to play this groove and I want you to play it, but it's not just about playing it. I want you to feel it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you ever get to see how these people dance when this song comes on, you will understand what all of these rhythms mean and how spiritual is, you know, house music is very spiritual. It's like church. When you go to a house club or something, you see these people dancing to this, like, and it's all this percussion going on. All of this stuff means something. It's not just some rhythms playing just randomly. Yes. Like all of these rhythms are coming from Cuba and Africa and all these places, you know, mixed with electronic, you know, sounds and stuff. So, you know, the experience is what I'm trying to teach these drummers instead of all the chops. And, you know, they all want to play chops and stuff. Can you show me this chop? I'm like, forget a chop, man. That's not going to get you the gig, bro. I'm like, your feel is what's going to get you the gig and keep you working. All the chops, that's secondary. That's good to have in your pocket when you need it. But when you go playing with Stevie Wonder and Prince and Michael Jackson and people like that, they want to hear bat, bat, bat.
To make some, bat, yeah.
Like,
that's what got me about you. I assume when somebody says, I think this you would love this guy in your band, that he has a lot of chops. So now I need to find out where's your groove. And it's like, if my shoulder starts moving or, you know, if you get that, any kind of anything, it just registers on the magic meter, you know, that's the thing. And you have to see it. Like, I felt that playing with African drummers from Ghana from the age of 7. Mm. When you see them play and then you see the dancers and you see how it all goes together. Colonel Bruce was the same way with me. I don't know if I really would have understood Sun Ra and a lot of the older blues guys. And the old bluegrass guys, unless I had seen it. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh, if you want someone to learn a groove, like you say, we got to go to the club and put you in the room with that groove. And now you know what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I'm in here analyzing and mimicking and just in the practice room. You know, it doesn't happen that way.
Exactly. And a lot of people miss that. Like, that's one thing that a lot of cats miss. They might have all the talent and creativity in the world, but they miss that connection between the rhythms and the people that you're playing the rhythms for. Like, yeah. You have to be able to convey that thing to somebody else and make them feel what you're playing. You know, O'Teal's a bad drummer. O'Teal is an amazing drummer, by the way. So he knows what's up. He'll sit down and play the shit for you. Like, nah, man, it goes like this.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. So, well, I'll tell you, you know, was it last year, O'Teal? I can't believe it's already almost been a year. Or maybe close to a year, you and Weedy, we went to Weedy Brima, yeah, played Blue Note, dude, and O'Teal flew up and sat in, and I got to, you know, he invited me to go, and wow, just the whole, I mean,
that whole band.
Oh, dude. My God, dude.
And the drummer, the bassist, Chuck Ndoye, who's Baba Miles, musical director, he keeps calling me, man, you got to come to Senegal, to this island, Gori Island, where all the old Ngoni, this is like the original base. He's like, all the old dudes live there. I need at least 5 days. And he wants to put me there. He's like, if I could put you there. Yeah, exactly. Right. I'm just like, I got to get somebody to keep these kids for 5 days. I need 3 nannies to help Jess because I got to go.
You know? That's like going to Wakanda.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You know, I just called Weedy and I said, look, man, because I was trying to get Bill Summers to teach me. And he's been so busy, I can't get him to respond to me. So I just called Weedy and I was like, look, I need the lessons. Tell me where to get the djembe. I want the good one. I don't want that crappy djembe, that commercial djembe. I want that real djembe. And help me, man. He said, I got you on Zoom. So he's getting me the djembe now. And I'm going to start doing these lessons because I want to learn what the rhythms mean.
Yeah, man.
Oh, this rhythm is for the river. This one is for some orisha, the folkloric back, whatever. Like, I know the rhythms. I've been cut off from what their original meaning is.
Man, you know? That's going to change everything for you.
Dude, I know. It's like caterpillar butterfly shit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And no one in that room at Blue Note that night left the same. Like it was, he took us on a journey. Dude, like, he was so captivating and so amazing. And, you know, Blue Note's that kind of sit down tight New York West Village room. Yeah. And he had us all up. And I mean, it was, yeah.
It was popping.
Yeah. Man, and he's got generations and generations of chops, but that heart, I mean, nobody can teach that. Yeah, man. That was at it. That show will go. I've seen some phenomenal shows. That's going to always be easily one of the top three experiences ever, because
Weedy could play a cardboard box and this shit sound amazing. Like, Weedy is a special character, man. That he really dude, is. Any drummer that has come, you know, through his path has been changed. I know I have. Like, we've played together in Atlanta a few times, and man, like, he showed me some stuff without even saying anything. Just the way I was like, oh, you know, because in my mind, I'm like a percussionist / drummer. Like, yeah. I feel like I'm a percussionist first, then a drummer. Like, when I play drums, I'm thinking like a percussionist, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. That's neat.
I've listened to Sheila E. and everybody, Baba Olatunji, like just so many percussionists. Alex Acuna, who I got a chance to hang out with a lot in LA at his house, and you know, like,
we got to circle back around and talk about that right there, dude.
Some of the best percussionists I've had a privilege to hang out with and learn stuff from. And I take that information and put it onto the drums. Like, the snare to me is like a timbale. That's how I hear the snare. Yeah. And that's what made me tune my snare the way it is, too. Because a lot of people are like, yo, how does your snare sound like that? I'm like, the first thing that I heard was a timbale when I was younger. Because my uncles played drums, so I would always play percussion next to them. And that's how I started learning how to play the kit, because I was playing timbales and cowbells and, you know, congas and stuff. And once I got on the drum set, it was just like, gah! It was like, rakata. I was playing all the stuff I played on the timbale on the snare now.
Wow.
So you really got that reggae that.
Yeah, I started hearing that frequency. Then I started hearing Clyde and Jabba with James Brown. I was like, yes. Whoa, what are these things happening in between the two and four?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, let me go sit down and figure this out. Like this buzzing thing that's happening, this slick, you know, funky drummer thing that was going on. Man, yeah. That changed my life, man.
It's my favorite drummers. My favorite drummers are melodically, like keyboard players, and maybe that's where this percussion thing is, because it's percussion. It's all these melodies, you know. Mm-hmm. I teach my students rhythmic melodies before. I'm like, I could sing you a rhythmic melody, and you know what the harmonic one is. Mm. So which one's more fundamental, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah. If you're thinking about percussion, that makes a lot of sense. It's just all these patterns and cross patterns and counterpoint. And
man, you ever see Dennis with P-Funk from back in the day?
I didn't see it live, but I've watched videos. Yeah.
Oh, dude. So the story was that the percussionist that was with P-Funk at the time either quit or something, got fired. So the percussion gear was still, you know, traveling with the group. Dennis took all the percussion and moved it on the side of his drum set and basically played timbales and cowbells.
Played
and
all of it.
He was playing. If you listen to One Nation Under Groove,
he's playing all the
parts. Like he was doing all the percussion parts while he was playing the beat. I was like, what is this?
Freak.
See, now, Oteil, that's when I say Freak. I believe in extraterrestrials, because...
But that's what I'm saying, but it's all the same with the Bibles, with all fairy tales, Star Wars, Harry Potter, aliens, whatever. This mystical thing, this magic thing, that's what I keep getting at. It could be music, it could be swimming, it could be whatever. But when you see someone do the impossible, it's what Sun Ra talked about all the time. He said, I deal in the impossible. So if you want to mess around with me, I'll show you some shit that you know is impossible.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So when you see that, when you see Derek Trucks at 11, you go, that's impossible. You see, like, I remember this band. I'll just call them out because I don't care anymore. But, you know, it's all good. But Kofi played with this R&B group called After Seven a long, long time ago. And they got rid of him to get somebody cheaper, I think. Well, they didn't realize Kofi had gone and checked their albums out, and he was really big into synthesizers. And you can split the keyboard on a synthesizer. So with two synths, you can have four synths. Well, Kofi was doing the whole arrangement that they had probably one guy do over, or multiple guys do, like, eight the different things, and he had it all. So when they replaced them, they were like, where's all the other parts? It's like they left with Kofi, dude.
That is amazing, you know? Oh, that's right. So funny.
So then he was hired another guy, and two of them couldn't do it as good as Kofi, and then they asked him to come back. I was like,
wow. Yeah,
he was playing three or four people's parts at the same time.
Two of them couldn't do it as good as Kofi. Kofi. Now that's just there's Jedi. There's some people have more midichlorians, whatever you want to call it. Kofi got them. Dennis got them. You got them. Mike, you got. You know, we all have them. So like, that's the thing to me that's most exciting about life, music, whatever, is finding that and then helping these kids believe that they have it and helping to get it out. You know, which, John, that's what you're doing there. Like, God bless you, man. You know,
I'm trying, man. Now let's go on the other side of it. Some of these kids think they already have it and they don't.
You got to thank TikTok and Instagram, John, for that, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Do you,
man,
put them on blast? Do you blast them?
In a way, but not, like, you know, you got to be careful with some of this stuff, you know, politics and how much money they're spending to go to this prestigious school. And you got to be careful. Like,
so, and they have the most fragile ego anyway, obviously, since they're
probably the loudest parents, too.
He's like, Little John's not saying.
I said it. You didn't. It's okay. Right. I don't teach
but
there.
I mean, look, I'm not going to play games with you if you're a student of mine. Like you, I will let you know what's happening. If it's happening, if it's not happening, I'm going to let you know.
Yeah.
Because that's definitely my job. I'm not supposed to just let you fly by and just get away with whatever. So. Yeah.
Well, those students have your name on it,
too. Right. Oh, you had Professor Robinson? You should be killing. Okay.
Yeah, they carry that. That's right. That's right. That's generational right there.
Yeah. So I find ways to let them know if it's happening or not, man. I got
you're teaching the next teacher, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Yeah. That's how Colonel Bruce did me. He was like, I ain't got nobody to answer to. He would just be like, you're giving me 20% of what you really have. That's what he used to call me and Sipe and Jimmy.
Wow.
His 20 percenters. And we thought we were hot shit, dude. We, you know. And he was just like, he blasted us.
He was a great guy, man. Like I got to get close to him really quick when I was with you guys. Like we had just one long run that I did with you guys. We were on a Winnebago. We were traveling on a Winnebago. I mean, but we had so much fun, man. I don't even think we made any money, but it didn't matter.
No, we did. I can guarantee we didn't do that.
You're like, I'll answer
so
that.
It was so much fun, man. It was so much fun. And musically, it was like being in heaven, man, playing with you guys and with Colonel and Kofi and Jimmy Herring.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Herring.
That was on. Yeah. There's a tape of that Ithaca where David Earl Johnson came out.
Yeah.
And man.
And Chuck sat in that night. Derek. I met Derek for the first time with you guys. It was in New York. I don't know. It was in New York because Wayne came, right? Wayne was there.
Wow, dude.
And Derek sat in with us that night. And I was like, who is this young guy playing like that? Like he was like 14 or something, probably.
13, 14. Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Funny how fast the time goes, doesn't it?
That's crazy. Now you look at Taz, right? Like, look at Taz and how he plays. I can't wait to see what happens with him. I mean, it's just so awesome to see these young guys that, like you said, that just have it. You know, that
touch. It must be exciting to see that at the school because I'm sure some, as in life, some people just stick out. You know?
Absolutely. I've seen some and I was like, woof.
Yeah.
I'm gonna remember this one right here, you know. And it's just great to just even have a hand in helping mold what they already have. Like some of them are really, really exceptional. So I'm just like, look, you could probably play worlds around me right now. I'm just gonna show you what you need to know when you leave here. If you take these principles, you are always going to work. I told this one drummer recently, I'm like, yo, man, he was playing in my Janet Jackson ensemble at the school, which we just did a show, you know, honoring Janet. And we did did a show of all her, you know, iconic music. So the drummer that I had on it, he wanted to, you know, go crazy and stuff like that, show off in front of his friends. I'm like, yo, bro, Janet would not let me play none of this stuff. Like, so stop. Just play the groove, play the song. You know, fill here and there, you know, when you need to. But the rest of it is pocket, man. Play the record. And I told him, I said, if you do this, I promise you, you will always work for the rest of your life. At least for this kind of stuff. You know, you could do all the other flashy stuff with a fusion group or something or a band of your own. But if you play with somebody like this, this is your role. This is what you
need.
And
they may even give you a spot where you could do it. Because Janet used to give you a spot, I guess, because she liked to dance. And dude, Little John was going off, bro. Like, you know, it was like Carter Beaufort in Dave Matthews band, you know, where they let you go.
I think Janet is a closet drummer, bro. Like, even sometimes in the show, we will be in a section in the show, and I might be up there riding, and, you know, and I see her on the stage going like this while she's dancing. Like,
her inner Sheila E., you know?
Yeah,
she wants to get up there and, like, Chaka Khan, too, man. It was surprise to me at all to see Chaka Khan kill it on the drums because her sense of rhythm, it's like Kofi's sense of rhythm on flute is better than a lot of drummers.
Right.
You know, but you can hear the way Chaka Khan sings that she's thinking rhythmically, you know?
Absolutely.
And, that's so great about Janet.
It's so refreshing to hear you talk about how you approach educating talented people, because, you know, it's really important when you're entering into, I mean, God, if every teacher from K through 12, public, private, whatever, would take that kind of selfless approach, that would be phenomenal. But when you're approaching the arts and you're looking up to all these folks and you don't know how to navigate a career or navigate your part on the team, to have someone say, hey man, cool, great, you can do that, wonderful, but if you want to work, this is how you do it. That's, dude, that's priceless, man. That is priceless.
Like, and look, that's where, do you want to be an Instagram sensation or do you want to make some money?
Exactly, man. Yeah,
you have a career. Career is long-term. We're looking all the way down the road, like 70 years.
But how many people don't have that? Right? How many people don't have you to say, not like, buddy, cool, enjoy your solo in your dorm room with your headphones on, listening to Bonzo or whatever. But like right now, you're a part of you're a finger on the hand. Like, that's so great that you do.
Look,
that,
I'm glad I was raised around the right cats, man. Cause you know, like I've been around some of the best cats in the world, man. I mean, Dennis Chambers, Omar Hakim, who I idolized. I patterned my style after Omar Hakim. Shouts out to him. I love him. He's my big bro. And we
dude, that team met Subterranea. Yeah. I got that from Omar Hakim.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Makes sense.
When did you meet him? I met him in Atlanta. Really young?
I met him in Atlanta at the PASIC convention. Well, actually, no. The first thing that happened was my boy, Ronnie Garrett, bass player, brought Omar to see my band, The Chronicle, play.
The
week we were playing at the Funk Jazz Cafe, like the early stages of this event that we used to do every year, the Funk Jazz Cafe. He brought Omar down and the Escovedos showed up too. I don't know how they found out, but they found out where we were playing. So Sheila wasn't there, but Dad, Pops, Pete, Juan, and Peter, all of them came down to see us play. And I didn't know they were there. We just went through the gig and played.
Thank God.
Ronnie told me later on, he's like, yeah, man, I had Omar here. I was like, what? So the next day I go to PASIC. And I go to their sound check. I see everybody. I meet them. They're like, oh, man, your gig was amazing. That's how your band, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow, thanks. I go see the concert that night. Pop Escovedo gets on the mic and he says, I went to see this young guy play last night with his band, da, 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 and he blew me away. And I want him to come up there and sit in with the band.
What?
He blasted.
I was sitting in the audience like, they want me to come up there and play with them? So I went up and played, man. We played one of the Latin songs with his band and all.
Nice.
I get off the drums and he's like, okay, I got another drummer friend of mine that I want to come up and play with us as well. Omar Hakim's in the building. I'm like,
shit.
So I'm going off the drums. He's coming up on the drums and I'm like, Omar,
I love you.
It was like seeing God. Like, this was the person that you had been like pattern your life after, man, like especially the drum wise, you know. Yeah. And I'm like, bro, you don't know what you've done for me in my life. And we'll talk later, you know. So we talked later, man. We kicked it off. Years later, after that, 94, 95. Omar invites me over to his house. I'm in New York. I go hang out at his house. We have dinner, you know, his lady's there. We all kicking it. I'm staying. He's like, man, you know, I'm kind of tired, whatever. Like, he's like, oh, just hang out, you know, take a nap if you want. I go up to one of the rooms. I take a nap. He's on the phone talking to somebody, right? I get up. I come back downstairs. He's off the phone. He says, yeah, man, I just got off the phone with Janet's management, Rex Salas, and, you know, a bunch of them call me. I'm like, you doing the gig? Cool. That's going to be great. He was like, he said, no. They called me asking about you. They wanted to see what I had to say about you, you know, possibly playing the gig.
You go, I got to go take another nap.
What are the chances that I was at Omar's house when they called him?
Amazing.
Like, this was all destiny, man. I was like,
No coincidence.
And he said, I told him that they should definitely get you on the gig, man. So I hope you get it.
You almost went home and went to sleep, but you went up, took a nap. You needed the rest to prepare yourself for that news.
It was a revelation.
Yeah.
It's to me, not anymore, man. I don't believe in coincidence. I'm wearing a hat. I'm going to go get it in a second. My manager's company, he has this hat and sweatshirt that says no coincidence. Mm. I don't believe it anymore, man. I don't know how this stuff is planned out, but it happens down to the second, the millisecond.
I mean, every instance in your life, man, the people that you come across, the reason why you meet certain people, you don't know what it is at that moment, but later on you find out, like, wow, yeah.
Even the things you witness versus the things you don't, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I think a lot of times about the stuff you don't see or the stuff that you don't hear about.
It went over your head.
And maybe for a reason. At the time, you weren't ready for it.
Exactly. I had a good one recently, man. I was watching that documentary on Colonel Bruce, and there was a poster. It was Grateful Dead, Allman Brothers Band, and Hampton Grease Band at the Atlanta Sportatorium in like 1969. I was like,
that's your life.
You're good. You are good.
Oh, wow, dude.
Yeah, dude. What?
It's crazy.
Like, it just all was sewn up in one thing. And I was like, all right. So this is
damn. Hey,
that's why we got to be careful what we think, man. Like good and bad things. Like we've really got to be careful of what we think, because those things definitely manifest. Like I was thinking about playing with Janet before I got the gig. I thought about playing with Stevie Wonder. Like one day I'd love to play with Stevie. One day I'd love to, you know, work with Michael Jackson. That would be so crazy to like record something with him. You know, man, Prince, I would love to like play with him one day. All of these things I said before it happened, man. It was
And boom. Hey, God said, I made you like us. Creative.
Exactly. Yeah.
God spoke all this, you know, into creation. If you speak it bad or good, you said it.
I saw a post recently. Somebody said, God, take the people that out of my life that aren't for me or whatever like that. Something about taking people out of my life. And he said, be careful of the prayer that you pray, you know, about taking people out, because it might just happen or it will happen. And it might not be the people that you want to be taken out. You know, you just making a random prayer about taking people away that aren't good for me or whatever like that. And all of a sudden, all these people start vanishing. You're like, I didn't mean that person.
You know what I find is I don't have to pray for the people to go away, because as I success, and it's not me doing it, but as I'm able to raise my vibration, it repels a lot of the people that it's like when you reverse the magnets and you can't get them to come together.
It's a force field.
It's a frequency, right? That's what we always try to get back to on the podcast. Like, what is this frequency that we could tune ourselves to? We certainly see how it has the effects in music, but what about in just our lives?
It's amazing. You know? And it's so funny, the things that you, the intangibles, you know, stand-up comedy is stand-up comedy. If you're comfortable doing it, great. But like you said, like you could have the chops, but do you have the heart, right? I'd watch my heroes. Yeah. I'd watch Dave Attell walk into the club with bags of candy for the staff. Just that little thing that he thought of, that sets the pace of the energy that the staff has as they greet the audience, as they sit down to get ready to hear his show. And probably not meaning it, he just set the tone for a really incredible experience for everyone.
Right.
And it's just watching that and watching him, and just a tiny little thing like that
it spreads like ripples.
Exactly.
He put a good vibration out and it rippled out. And now that's in the whole room. That's
just bags of candy, dude.
It's a tone.
As simple as that, but it was a tone.
Frequency. Yeah. Yep. He dialed that frequency up.
Yep. He went up to the thermostat and said, there's my temperature.
Let's put a little more love in it. There we go.
Yeah, man. It's exactly it. And it's just little things.
The power of prayer. The power of prayer can change. It could change the whole mood of a room, you know, like when, before we go on playing and things like that, just a little prayer. It doesn't have to be nothing deep. Just God bless my performance, you know, pray for everybody that's involved here. That just set the tone for everybody. Like even if they didn't want to be a part of it, you just elevated what's going to happen for them that night.
You know who did that every night? Is Earth, Wind & Fire, man. You know, you knew Ricky Keller, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Ricky Keller was Colonel Bruce's bass player. For fans that don't know, when I met Bruce, Ricky Keller was his bass player and produced all of his records and played on all of his records. And Ricky Keller was tight with Reverend Oliver Wells, who was tight with Earth, Wind, and Fire. And he brought him to a concert. So he told me this story after I had my incredibly mystical experience that brought me to my knees. It was like a religious experience. He said, I want to have dinner with you, O'Teal. And I was like, okay. So we had dinner. He said, I want to tell you about this time that I went to see Earth, Wind, and Fire. Well, he wanted me to tell him the story of what happened. And I did. And after he goes, I want to tell you what happened with Earth, Wind, and Fire. In the dressing room, I got to hang with him. And of course, he was like, wow, you know. But they all stood in a circle and prayed before the gig. And he was in the circle holding hands, you know, and when it got done, he didn't even realize it, but he was covered in tears, just drenched.
Wow.
And I said, whoa. He said, man, I don't want you to ever let anyone talk you out of that experience that happened to you. Because he said, I felt the Holy Spirit that day, and it was real as it gets, man. And I don't even know if he was a believer before or anything like that. But that being in that circle with Earth, Wind, and Fire, which is like, duh, it's probably going to do it. But, dude, he was just drenched with tears. He was like, what happened? Mm. And they were like, that was the Holy Spirit, bro. There's no mistaking it.
Yeah. So, and it's no mistake that that was their name, too. He was literally holding hands with the elements of life.
I mean, dude, and I just went to see them. I saw him for the first time. And here, Verdeen is like 70-something and still jumping around. It's just like being totally energetic, right? It was 100 degrees, dude. I was sweating so hard. And he was wearing this elaborate thing. I know he had to be sweating under there. Killing it, playing stuff that I hadn't heard him play before. I was like, oh, yeah, Verdeen. I'm crying the whole time, dude. The whole time. I'm like, that's childhood. Oh, God. Keep your head to the sky. You know, like, oh, dude, it was, that's magic.
That's man, what magic. Made him come up with that bass line in Shining Star?
Boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom.
Dude, he had every little, oh, man, it was so good. He was so good, man.
I'm a bass player in my mind, by the way. I haven't played it yet. And I've even told O'Teal a long time ago I want to play bass.
Yeah.
I got to do it before I leave this
earth. Start now. Yeah. Start. Dude, I picked up banjo at like 48. And I wrote a whole record. Dude, it's never too late. I done talked a couple 50 or 60-year-olds into starting piano. I was just like, just play for fun. I do. Like,
yeah.
It's fun that's accessible to all of us. That's another one of those brainwashing lies. Oh, it's too late for me to.
Never
too late to have a happy childhood, you know?
Yeah.
Dude, you on bass? Bro, you on bass.
I feel it.
Please.
One of my favorite drummers was a badass bass player, man. Joel Smith, who was playing with the Hawkins. Yeah. And man, his bass playing was so just as phenomenal as his drumming. So, you know, a lot of bass players that are drummers like yourself, you know, just it's second nature, man.
It helps the bass playing. I tell them, oh, please play drums and other instruments. Like you said, just not bass.
Yeah.
But drums for sure. And the way you think melodically, man, dude, you on bass.
I hear all of it. If I could just put it to my fingers. It's a wrap.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a 99-cent subscription to my teaching app, the Ozone, which will take you from 4 to 5 to 6. You got my number. You can call me. And it's
look
got
at that light. Look at that light shining on me right now.
Wow.
I don't know where that came from.
That is so crazy.
Do you see this?
Yes,
I do see it.
Like, I was trying to wipe my screen or whatever, like, but this light is... Wow, that's crazy.
Whoa.
Dude, come on.
Yeah, dude. Don't get out of the way. It's supposed to be there.
Kofi, yeah, man. I mean, I called you Kofi. Wow.
Dude, see, he's here.
That's Kofi.
That's him.
What's up, man? So thank you, man. I would love that. That'll definitely put some fire under my ass and let me, you know, make me start playing. Please,
oh,
send
my
that.
God.
What an unbelievable, that this whole thing right here is nuts.
Man, freeze 1 second. I got to bring you that. Just 1 second.
Well, while he's gone, I want to ask you, I got to ask you about, you know, Chappelle's obviously one of my heroes doing stand up and all that. But I mean, you know, he's put on such great events and stuff and included the music. He's one of those guys that can channel.
Oh, man, Dave. He's a closet musician. In his mind, he's a musician. I mean, and he says all the time, like, musicians wish they were comedians. Comedians wish they were musicians. Like, you know, it's a thing.
That's me and Mike.
That's how we became. Yeah, literally, dude. Yeah, that's how we became buddies.
Chappelle play Around Midnight on piano.
That's his favorite song.
I saw him do it.
Uh-huh.
He knows.
But he loves the live aspects of music and everything. Like, every time we play with him and hang out, it's so much fun, and he has so much appreciation for any instrumentalist or artist that performs with him or around him. He's just such a great guy, man.
He really is.
Really cool.
I'm going to violate a cardinal sin right now that I tell musicians to never do, and I'm actually going to do it on the air.
Uh-oh.
But next time that happens, will you call me and give me an...
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't even ask Mayer, and Mayer was going to hang out with. I was like, don't do it. Because you should never ask to sit in students, younger musicians. It's not proper etiquette to ask to sit in. Don't show up with your acts. But if you really only have 6 months to live, or you're trying to live like that, and your friend happens to be Little John Roberts, sometimes you just got to go. Man, because, you know, me and him have the same birthday. We got the D.C. connection.
Oh, man. Y'all would vibe so hard.
He's the coolest, man.
If he heard you play in front of him.
That's what I'm trying to get to happen. Sometimes you got to speak some things out. When y'all play the opening of the, the National African American Museum of History?
Yes. Yep.
I don't get jealous about hardly anything, man. Like, I've been so blessed. Like, I have my cup is running over like a tsunami. Dude, I was straight up green. I was just green as this shirt with envy. I was like, Little John has all the fun.
Man, we had so much fun.
I was happy for you.
Derek Hodge was playing with us that night.
I'm going to get him on soon. I was so happy for you guys, you know, but I was just like,
no, we're going to get you up to the barn. When they start doing that again,
yeah.
Fred Yannette sees this, who handles the music side of everything with Dave.
And the Fred, comedy, too.
And Fred
the
comedy is in D.C. Oh, yeah. I mean, we can make a whole hang out of it, man. All you got to do is just get there. Yellow Springs, Ohio.
I'll go gas the car up, OTL. I'll come pick you up.
Bro, yeah.
It's perfect, too, because Ohio's where, like, Bootsy and Ohio players are like this funk thing in Ohio.
Man, Ohio's got something in the water, like Philly, you know. But Cincinnati, every time I play Cincinnati, Bootsy would come to the show, man.
He'd bring him in,
he'd just be sitting on the side. Like, the last time I played there was like with Music Soul Child, who he really loves, and both of them are really cool with each other. Every time we play in Cincinnati, he's in the corner hanging out, like, oh, we're going like this.
Dude, like, you know you're doing something good when you're just grooving and you look over and there's Bootsy, like.
Bro, I play with Bootsy on the Monique show. We did Rather Be With You, and we did the boom, 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 boom. What song is that? We like to party. I forgot the name of that song. We played those two songs.
That's a wrap.
Yo, let me tell you something. Bootsy is probably the loudest bass player I've ever played with.
Yeah, I know this to be true, bro. Oh, my God.
Well, you know about his bass. He has like 10,000 watts in his bass, right? O'Teal, did you know that? He has like 10,000 watts in his bass.
Holy shit.
So it's super powerful. And he likes his rig is like two big ass, like, not Ampegs. They're like these huge sub-looking amps.
We were playing a club one night in Aspen, a small club, and they had played the night before. And I don't know if their stuff was broken down. And they were like, dude, I said, man, that's a big PA for that club. They go, that's not the PA.
Wow.
That's Bootsy's. The PA couldn't compete with Bootsy's. He had PA speakers that were bigger than the whole PA for the whole club.
So you know the story behind that, right? You know the story behind that from back in the day. Bootsy told me they made sure that the stage was louder than the house, because they wanted whatever the volume was on the stage is what they wanted the whole audience to hear. So that's why they all had those big speakers on stage. They wanted to fill the room with just their speakers before it even got to the PA system.
Damn.
Makes it a little bit hard to mix for the sound, man.
But the stage is rocking.
But the stage is rocking. But you're going to sack. You're going to go deaf.
That's why they can't hear now.
The Grateful Dead did that. They had the wall of sound. Remember the wall of sound? But it was behind the band. I was like, you should have put that in front. They were deaf by 70, whatever, whenever they did that the first year.
Oh, my goodness. So when I played with him, I had to ask for another sub. I had to get a second sub. Because his thumps was louder than my kick drum.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you must have had to put, like, bags of concrete in your drum, in your bass, to not rattle.
I had to use two big subs.
Jesus.
Just so I could hear more of my kick drum, because his bass was so loud. Like, if you walk past the bass, if you walk past his rig and you had, like, long hair or whatever, like a girl or a guy with long hair, the hair is just...
That's hilarious. Oh, that's so funny. I've been listening to Praxis a lot. Animal Behavior with him, Bernie Worrell, Buckethead. Yeah. Man, it's just so good. And he's unbelievable. That's a guy I'd love to meet.
Bill produce that stuff?
Yeah, I think so. Bill so Laswell. Good. Yeah.
Oh, Teal, I'm going to text you a video of us rehearsing.
Dude, please.
I'd rather be with you.
I got to play with Bernie Worrell a couple of times before he passed away, thankfully. Boy, you talk about the X Factor. Talk about an extraterrestrial.
Yeah, he's anything
magic
that he touched.
Wizard.
Yeah,
he's really from amazing. Another planet for sure.
John, did you ever have a chance to check out Dave work out new stuff at the Cellar ever? Did you ever come to the Comedy Cellar with Chappelle in New York?
I've been in other places where he just sat in, just trying stuff out. Yeah.
Can I tell you? Amazing. And I want to, it's just like, he is, like you said, he's a musician. Like, we would have these, you know, new material nights where we would go up and try to rattle off a couple new thoughts or whatever. Every time Dave would hit the stage, it was just like he changed the entire like atmosphere and tempo of the room, where it was just like, now we're operating on his time. Now everybody's operating on his clock, and he's going to take his time and pace. And he'd stay up there sometimes 3-4 hours just thinking out loud. Yeah. Yeah. And he'd bring up Busta Rhymes. He'd bring up,
y'all don't stop. Y'all are on 24/7. You guys.
Blessing and a curse, dude. Double-edged butter knife, I call it.
You know, musicians the same way. We're always thinking of rhythms and harmonies and all that stuff all day long. It's just a part of our life. But you guys, I've been around a bunch of comedians. Y'all are always trying something out on somebody. It's hilarious. It's like we're constantly assassins, dude. Performing. I had to tell some of my friends, like, hey, man, can you just shut it down now? Like,
You know what you got to do? You got to light them. Because this is the thing with comedy. I've been doing this in life now. When you're a comic and you're on stage, the way that they let you know to wrap up your set is they light you. They'll go like this. This means 2-3 minutes, wrap it up. So in life, if a comic's working some shit out on you, just light them, dude. They'll die laughing. That's our secret. Light
Thank
people.
You. Yes. I'm going to use that from now.
I do it without, like, I'm sitting with other comics and I'll just go like, wrap it up. Let's go. You're running long.
But some people, man. I mean, can you imagine being married to like Robin Williams? Or can you imagine being like,
I couldn't Robin imagine being married Williams to me.
I'm not you know, just like always on.
She's got to be a special girl, right?
Dude,
man, I just saw this. Look at that.
Oh, Bootsy, man. Wow. Where is that?
At the grocery store?
Is that in Cincinnati?
This was at the Monique show. This was a TV show that I played with Monique. You know, the comedian, actor, actress. So that was 2010. And that was the time that he came on. Like, we had all the best guests come on that show. It was a late night TV show. So we were the house band. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Dude.
I just saw it in my phone. I was like, oh, let me show him this. Because I was trying to find a video that I'm going to send you. But
incredible.
You're going to dig it.
It's incredible when you go to those late night studios, like you see Conan and then you see where like Max Weinberg and the band is. And it's like on TV, it looks so huge. But when you get into the studio, it's tight, man.
Yeah,
it's tiny.
Yeah, you know, I met John Stewart. I taught him. I gave him a lesson.
Good friends with Dave.
Did you? Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So he was hanging with
drums.
Dave.
I shouldn't be surprised he plays drums.
A lot of comics play drums, man. Bill Burr plays drums. Bobby Kelly plays drums. That's Jay plays drums. Yeah. Bunch of people.
He came to see me play one night because they were in town. So I had a gig that all of them came to after their show. And John's on the side just watching and smiling and everything. I'm like, you want to play? He was like, so I let him sit in with the band. He had a great time sitting in. And he came to me and he said, man, what are you doing tomorrow? Are you really busy? Do you have any time? Like, could you come to the venue and like give me a lesson if you got time? I'm like, sure. I took a little kid down there. Took a kid down there and just showed him some grooves, man. He played it right away after I showed it to him. I was like,
that's awesome.
So every now and then we'll text each other and just, hey, man, how you doing? You know, just checking on you.
Him.
I hit him when they honored him at the Kennedy Center and just congratulated him and everything. So John is a really great guy. Yeah.
You can tell, man. I love that guy. I know we've been keeping you a while, but we can't let this hour pass without talking about Wayne Shorter passing. That really got me yesterday, man.
Yeah.
Last night.
Yeah. You know, we've lost a lot of people. It's been a steady stream. And I'm glad that he was old and, you know, had such a rich, rich life. But man,
that's a big one.
I just had to sit here and cry for a minute, man. That one just hit me like, you know, since a colonel. You know, I mean, obviously Kofi and my dad is huge, but that was a big one, man. That was a really big one.
He influenced all of us, man, in so many ways. You know, he left a huge legacy, though, that we'd be happy about that he did that, man. I mean, he lives a full, full life. And the music is there. Yeah, the memories, the music, everything is there to look at any point in time that you want to. It's funny. I was just teaching one of my students Endangered Species.
Yeah.
I was teaching them how to play Endangered Species.
Wow. Yeah. And Patitucci, one of your faculty mates, was playing most of this last stuff that Wayne did on Earth.
Wow. You know? Man, he hit me on my DM and I freaked out. I was like, Patitucci? He's texting me? Oh!
Yeah,
I'm like, bro, you don't understand how, like, I was listening to those guys as a teenager at church, you know, because that was the first, my first experience of fusion jazz and everything outside of gospel music. That was my first experience.
It was Electric Band.
Of the music. Yeah.
Really? A
lot of church musicians, I'll let you know, we all were listening to Dave Weckl and the Electric Band, Chick Corea.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah. See, the Chick Corea for me goes back to the 70s, you know, the Stanley, Lenny White, Al Di Meola, Romantic Warrior, all that stuff.
Yeah, but for us, Electric Band was what we were exposed to next after church. And then I started listening to Elvin and Miles and all this stuff after that. But the Electric Band was an introduction to, you know, fusion and jazz. Yeah.
That was the first time that I saw someone besides Anthony Jackson really play a six string. It was John Patitucci back then. I was playing in a top 40 band in Virginia Beach called the Squares. And they came through. They played one of the same clubs we played, and we were just like, oh man, Patitucci was
rock
killer.
Stars. They were rock stars.
And so when he like called me later, you know, your phone rings and it says John Patitucci. Like,
Isn't that crazy?
Sweetheart, man. You couldn't meet a nicer guy. And boy, does he know about the magic and the spiritual part of it, which is why he ended up playing with Wayne and Brian Blade and Calderazza, you know.
You got to tap in. Like, this should let people know, like, it's bigger than your talent. It's so much bigger than what you can do creatively and all like that. Like, you got to be tapped in spiritually in some form or fashion, man. Like, you can't get around it.
No, you can't. I have a new saying that there is no science without magic, because who's doing the science? Who's doing the measuring? The person. the person consciousness, which can't be measured, is the magic part. So you can't have any science without the magic.
Right. You know? Yeah. You and it's a lot of people, level. A lot of people riding on that dark side, man. And
yeah,
you know, it works for some people, but it doesn't work for everybody. I'd rather be in the light, bro.
Yeah. Yes. Rather, right there. It showed up. Yeah. From where we're sitting, you're in the light, bud. Damn, that's crazy. I can't stop
dark
looking
magic
at it.
Dark magic works too. The plenty of people are doing it. You can make all the money you want, subjugate all the people you want, and do that's creative. You can be creatively inspired to do that too. But that tab, you got to pay that tab. I'd rather have my karma. I'm sorry. You got to reap what you sow. So
Satan was one of the strongest, you know, angels at one point.
That's right.
Until he thought he felt like he was, you know, bigger than God.
God
and
said,
that's
well,
why he had to go.
Made you free just like them. So you're going to have to be free. Well, man, thank you so much, dude. I just, you know, I love you, man. I just love,
I love
catching
you too,
up with you. And, man,
I'm glad we could do this. We could talk forever. I mean, I
we
got to
do it again.
Talk about.
Yeah, because I really want to go through your whole, like, your mentors in Philly, you know, family, all that. Then up to, there's like all these eras of your career that, you know,
One fun fact, Oteil, that will take us to the continuation later is that my family are full of boxers.
Interesting.
My grandfather was light heavyweight champion of the world.
Whoa.
Harold Johnson, look him up. You see a picture of him. He's muscular.
What year was that? What year was that?
50s, 40s, 50s.
Damn.
Dude, yeah, I'm writing this down.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
He fought Sonny Liston.
Holy shit.
Are you serious?
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of people felt like that last fight that he fought, he should have won. Everybody felt like he should have won that last fight with Sonny Liston.
Well, while we Google your grandfather, tell all the listeners where they could find you and everything that you're doing.
Everything Lil John Roberts, Liljohn Roberts.
.com.
Yeah, that's it right there. Yeah, all of it. Yeah, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. Yep.
Yeah, because he's definitely doing a lot of things all the time.
There's a lot of podcasts that we end up doing where, like, afterwards we're like, we got to get that person live and just have a live chat.
Oh,
this
yeah.
Has to be, we have to do that. We definitely have to meet up with you and just chill and do a live talk. Cause
I gotta
shake your hand. Like, this is like weedy. Like, this is like the minute we hang up, I'm going to be like, I got to meet you. I have to meet you and hang with you. You just seem so cool.
We gonna do it, man.
Got a feeling we will.
Yeah. And Weedy, that is my brother, man. Much love to Weedy.
Sure. I love him.
We had him on the podcast. We'll get you on together next time.
Live.
Let's do that.
That'll be a time right there.
And I'm going to speak this out there. You, me, and Weedy got to record something together. I know once I'm getting my djembe lessons going, you heard that banjo bass, right? I got this banjo bass with nylon strings on it.
I do not know about
this. It's big. Dude, it sounds very African. It sounds like an Ngoni bass.
Oh.
Much more so than a regular bass.
Are you using that on the dead gig?
No, but I'm using it like I want to use it with John Medeski. I want to use it in these new projects that are like where I want to really dial the ancient frequency into the future frequency and put the that's what I'm thinking about. You, me, Weedy, banjo bass.
Oh man, yes, please. Man, by the way, I haven't recorded with you since that last record we did with you and Kofi.
Yep.
That was an amazing project, man.
That's the last recording I did with Kofi and Colonel Bruce. And you and me and Kofi and the Colonel are all on that track dedicated to Elvin Jones together.
Yeah, man. Some beautiful stuff on there, bro. I still remember the feeling when we were recording that stuff, man. The vibration was so high, man. It was so uplifting. So thank you for letting me be a part of that.
Dude, let's do 10 more.
I'd love to.
I love you, man.
Absolutely. Love you too, man. Hey, good meeting you, man.
Totally, bro. While we're putting stuff out there, I want to tour with Dave Chappelle. So now it's out there in the universe.
There it is.
And we'll be listening. And we'll be listening to your guys' album when we're on the road on the jet.
See, that's how you got to do it. You got to be specific when you ask God for stuff.
Got to be specific.
Yeah. So no pressure, guys. But record this album so I can get on the road with Dave. I'm not getting any younger.
Let's go.
Bye, guys.
All right, man.
Take care, y'all.
Love, little John.
Thanks.
Love you.
All right, buddy. You too, man.
Bye, bye.
Later.
Osiris.